flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on The Morning Shift, and we're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. All right, we already told you. We have opened up the lines for you to call in and give us your thoughts on the Falcons hiring Jeff Ulbrich as their new defensive coordinator. You can call us 404-726-0929 to weigh in on that. And first caller of the day we have is Chief waiting on us. Good morning, Chief. What's happening?
What's happening, Chief?
What's happening? I don't think she liked saying that too much, huh?
I did. I was choked up. That's how emotional I was to hear your voice and to know it was you on the other line. Does that sound sincere? Does it?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Good morning. We're talking about Jeffrey, I guess, this morning. So let's put it this way. Sometime you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I don't think Raheem was with that because I don't know a lot about this guy. I know he was here before or whatever, but it just seems like to me what's going to happen again is that we want to be aggressive on defense, right? But we still play this passive-aggressive defense. Like, be aggressive, but don't be aggressive. And that's going to get us beat every time because there's too much thinking for the players sometimes.
But you just said didn't know a lot about him, but you're already projecting.
Well, because he's a Raheem person. And that's what I'm saying. Raheem was comfortable, you know, with someone he's comfortable with. And I understand that, like you said earlier, Tiffany, you might want to have someone, you know, you're comfortable with. That's, you know, but sometimes being uncomfortable is not a bad thing. And I just wish that we get out this passive-aggressive defense thing because it gets us beat. We don't have a pass rush, so we have to create a pass rush. So that means you have to be more aggressive. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, it's just been a long time since we had a good defense.
Well, and Chief, I'll say this. When Raheem was more involved the last quarter, I would say, maybe just over a quarter of the season, last six games, right, they were much more aggressive with sending blitzes, and they got home more. Mike, you noted that they seemed to get better with the stunts they ran. Or is it just me? Have I gotten more aware of watching the guys up front with stunts, or do the teams rely on stunts more than ever to create pass rush these days?
I think simply put, the Falcons have had to.
But I'm just meaning overall in the NFL. I was watching. There was like Philly got one of their sacks, and it was simply off of a stunt where the offensive line didn't hand it off well.
Yeah,
and
Jalen Carter wrapped, I believe, around the edge.
He got set free once too, where the center didn't come back. Just like boom, there he goes.
Yeah, and I think it's about quarterback matchups. It's about creating havoc. But if you don't have the edge rusher, and sometimes even if you do have the edge rusher, but if you don't, if you're better on the interior or at the linebacker spot, a lot of times that's how you go about your business. So I don't know that it's been ramped up. I just think that, you know, what we've had to do in Atlanta has kind of, you know, opened the gates for that. I think Ryan Nielsen obviously specializes in that. And I think you ended up having to go back to more of that as the season progressed because it's what Caden Ellis specializes in. Arnold Ebiketie would start having success. A fresh-legged Grady Jarrett started doing it a lot better. So I don't know, man. It, to me, when you look at Jeff Ulbrich's past, and we've talked about it, Robert Saleh, all the way back to when he was in San Francisco, rush four. He's had those elite guys up front, and he's been able to do that. And so I think mixing the two together, hopefully you get a nice blend of that. But without that elite closer that we always talk about, it's hard to just rush for. You kind of have to rush the stunts and do other things on the interior to, you know, get in the quarterback's face and get a hand up in his face.
Back to the lines we go. We got Matthew and Jasper. Good morning, Matthew.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, man?
Hey. So this is just more about scheme, two types of football. New England did it for years. I kind of like the more conservative, controlled, let's win on fundamentals. This is just personal preference. And Brian Nielsen for years was, you know, a blitz scheme guy. I'd rather see, you've got so many quarterbacks in the league now that are run option quarterbacks. I would rather see a control, fewer sacks, but a controlled scheme, better on the back end. Like I said, it's just personal preference.
Yeah.
When you go high leverage and you're trying to scheme, you know, that's feast famine. You know, you'll get burned bad, but you also get more sacks. So there's my two cents. Thanks.
Yeah.
We appreciate the call.
And I think there's a lot of what he's trying to say. You know, we don't want to let the quarterback get out of the pocket by getting out of our rushing lanes or being too overly aggressive. And look, that's what's frustrating, too, is you've looked a number of times the last couple of years. Ryan Nielsen ended up having a bad rap for it, and I think you saw that, you know, start to rear his head against Jaden Daniels. A lot of times when these quarterbacks did break contain, you had guys there for them. And I think that's one of the things that I look at Jeff Ulbrich and is it a good hire or is not. We have to find more athleticism at the second level.
Well,
right? We have to.
And that was, to me, the most frustrating thing that I watched last season with this defense, especially the early half, was you were playing so far off the ball in your secondary. And you didn't. Not only did you not give your guys time to get home, but you allowed teams to essentially. It was almost like you were playing a prevent defense the entire game, and teams could. And any quarterback that knew that could that it was like you know the veteran quarterback, the savvy guy was like, "Oh, you're going to give me a 6-yard completion? Okay, boom. Now it's second and four. Now we can run the ball. We can throw the ball. We can do whatever the hell we want to your defense, and that killed you because." Yep. And so when he's when I hear say conservative, that's fine. At least come up, disrupt the guys off the line of scrimmage as far as the receivers are going, and then maybe see if you can get home because you give yourself a half a second or a second more to get home.
I mean, I agree with you. And look, they ended up doing that. But I think there is another side of the coin you have to bring up where you look at the corners that we you know the schematics we were playing against Minnesota. And all of a sudden, if you don't get home, then all of a sudden these guys are behind you and they're creating explosive plays. And that's always the balance you have to find. And that's why it's important to run different schemes and disguise things. And, you know, look, there's a lot of different ways to do it. And he talked about Matthew, our caller just a second ago, talked about fundamentals and Bill Belichick and, you know, limiting things. You also have Steve Spagnuolo, who's not afraid to absolutely bring the house down in and down out, although he only did it for about a quarter this past weekend. So, There's multiple different ways to do it, and I think that as you saw the Falcons season kind of move along, they did hug up more. They did tighten up a little more, and that did allow the defense to get home, but I don't have the ability to do it. Maybe there's a website. I would love to know the completion percentage the Falcons gave up in the first half of games this year. All 17, if you lined it up, I bet it is an asinine number. Baker Mayfield, 14 of 15. Prescott, 12 of 13. I mean, just ridiculous. Like, it seemed like you couldn't buy an incompletion in the first half.
Yeah, because you were
so far
10 yards off the ball.
I know.
And I guess the thing that the reason I was high on Martindale, and that was why I was my first choice, is not only was he, you know, and I had some fun with, oh, he's an old savvy, but his specialty is disguise. He does a phenomenal job of being aggressive without tipping his hand constantly, and he did a good job of confusing with his scheme. I haven't watched enough New York Jet football, and I don't know if they're in even as good as their defense was at times under Ulbrich. Their offense was so pathetic that how often did that affect
the defense having to be on the field all the time?
Yeah, right. So I need to go back and watch where he was aggressive and wasn't. But that was my thing, and I think that's why Mike wants to use the word vanilla, or it was using it, because I think, to me, Martindale, I'm not saying Ulbrich is vanilla, but Martindale was the exact opposite of vanilla. In fact, you could probably say he might have been too aggressive at times, but he was good at disguising it. And that's something Ulbrich's going to have to do if they cannot get better talent in here on defense in the first year.
All right, well, let's hear from you. We'll go back to the lines. We got Mr. Yo waiting on us. Good morning.
Yo. Good morning, morning shift.
What up, man?
Welcome back, Tiffany. We missed you. So, listen. The easiest way to create pressure in the NFL is to have four down linemen that can get to the quarterback. We watch it all the time. We saw Tom Brady lose twice to the Giants because they could just rush four and drop the rest of the guys. So we know that it can be done. Now, both of the coaches that we were looking at do that really well with the personnel. And so we go back to it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmys and Joes. And so I've been having a lot of conversations with people on Twitter because we love arguing on Twitter about this kid out of UGA, Jalen Walker. And I like him. He has a good game. He's 20 years old. He's undersized. He's a coverage linebacker in NFL. Y'all need to get off that kid. If you want somebody who can put somebody on the ground, go look over at Alabama and that Jihai Campbell, because that dude had 112 tackles this year when Jalen Walker only had 35. Y'all need to stop it. If they bite as a puppy, they will bite as full-grown dogs. And what we need to do is have some full-grown dogs on this defense. I don't want to see one offensive player drafted this year. We need to get bigger, stronger, and faster in that front seven. And yes, if we can get a corner, let's do that as well. Love the show, guys. Talk to you later.
Appreciate that and the passion.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked that Mr. Yo went there. I thought for sure Mr. Yo was calling in to give us a rant on a defensive tackle and getting pressure up the middle.
Well, that's because he's been tweeting us about defensive tackles.
I know, that's the most interactions I see about Yo is, hey, we got to get younger and bigger on the interior, which I think we do. I think he's spot on with it. I don't know that that's, you know, where you're picking. I don't know that you're going to get that guy at 15, but I think they attempted to do that last year, is to get younger up front and you know, guys that can play in the interior. So we'll see how that pans out. I don't think you go that route with 15, knowing you just took Dorless, Aroro, and some of the other guys you have, Harrison the year before. You know, so we'll see how that all pans out.
I will not complain at all about the draft pick as long as it is the best defensive player available at their position. Whether and now it's hard.
Safety.
It's hard to quantify, I guess, qualify what that would be, because you're like, well, everybody's different, and all these guys. I mean, Michael Penix wasn't the top quarterback off the board, but hell, he didn't look like the second best quarterback in the three games I saw. I'm not gonna say he's better than Jaden Daniels. Like it's you know, Bijan Robinson, Terry's won in the first round, other than the first pick, the tight end, because Drake London is a stud. Bijan Robinson is a stud. Michael Penix looks like every bit of it. If it's Jalen Walker, I'm in. If it's the kid from Tennessee, James Paris, I'm in. I don't care. Just go draft defense.
Back to the lines we go, and we have the sports professor. On the line.
It's my guy, but
also
don't.
Known as Skip. That is, I was told by Dylan, that is how you
Good morning, good morning. Good morning. Good morning to Sports Doc.
What's up?
Good morning, Sports Professor. Good morning.
We know you're a comedian, so here we go.
Hey, man, but good morning, Tip, Queen Tip. Mike Mafia's in the house. And Squid Dylan, how you doing? Okay. My take on it is that I'm like you, Squid. I wanted the game show host guy, Martindale. I wanted him. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. Like Mike said, it is what it is. So I think we might have a little advantage with JU, because you got to realize, if you look at our schedule, man, we got to play the AFC East, and we got to play that NFC West division. So he got a leg up on how to play those guys, you know, on defenses. But I'm like the last guy, Yo, said, that was one of my takes I was going to say, too. As Mike would say, we got to get bigger in the pants. We kind of light in the pants back there.
Now you're right about that. Maybe that's a good expression that we appreciate the call.
I don't know that
Skip.
I put it quite as enthusiastic as that, but yes, got to get bigger in the pants.
When we come back here on the morning shift, well, we will get you caught up on your NFL divisional round scores, some good games over the weekend. That's just ahead here. We go in the huddle on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, let's flash back to the NFL divisional round games that were played this weekend. We can start on Saturday. The Chiefs beat the Texans 23-14. And I think I know where you're going to go with this, but I'm not certain. Maybe you're going to go with what a lot of the headlines said, what a lot of people are saying about the officiating in the game and some of those calls that went in favor of the Chiefs.
Yeah, I had this conversation at Twin Peaks last night when we were out there for the college football watch party, and somebody was saying something to me about it, and I said, well, the reality is you go look at any sport where there are stars or there are guys that have a history of winning and they get calls. I'm a big Braves fan. You guys know that. Chipper Jones, my favorite player of all time. And I remember watching Chipper take borderline balls or strikes, and he wouldn't swing, and he would watch it, and it would be called a ball. And then you could name anybody else in the lineup would step in, and it was the same pitch called a strike. Because Chipper got that call because you trusted that player, right? Even the human element of an referee and umpire, you get those calls. Now, the fact that Mahomes is getting those, I think, comes from where NFL officials are protecting a quarterback, especially they're protecting a star quarterback like Mahomes. It's absurd, the two calls that went against Houston, especially the second one where he runs around out of the pocket as a runner and then slides down and the defenders collide and you call the flag.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate because I do think that Patrick Mahomes has become the new version of Tom Brady in that. He is, and he's the face of the NFL just like Tom Brady was, but he's flopping a lot. And I think Troy Aikman actually called attention to it during the broadcast. Like, dude, I get it, man. You're trying to get the call, but these referees have to notice it at some point and notice what's going on here. And it was hard to watch, dude, because anytime you give the referees the benefit of the doubt against the narrative and you look at it and go, well, you know, it shouldn't hit, you know, shouldn't have done this. And then when it's that bad, I think all of us, you look at it and go, dude, you can't cover for that. Like at some point you got to step in and say, no, you're flopping. Not what you're trying to make it out to be. I'm not calling a penalty on that.
Instead of the Chiefs kind of, you know, adding on to their sense of history and the remarkable run that they've had, you know, everyone's talking about the calls on this game. Here's Texans head coach DeMeco Ryans.
We knew going into this game, man, it was us versus everybody, right? When I say everybody, it's everybody, all of whatever. Everybody, the naysayers, the doubt, right? Everybody we had to go against today.
So I think the question was about officiating, but he couched it because, you know, you can get fined.
Yeah.
So he took the right approach saying it was us against everyone.
When you have a guy like Troy Aikman, whose career was cut short because of the hits he took with concussions, and he's calling out the absurdity of some of these calls, and then I think it comes with real. I also give Troy Aikman a lot of credit because there's a lot of NFL announcers or the analysts that won't call attention to it. And then Mahomes gets the first two calls, and then it leads to an open flop on the sideline. I mean, Mahomes literally got shoved, just touched inbounds, and as he touches the white line, he flails like he's LeBron in the middle of a game. It was just
Fun to watch.
That bothered me.
Fun to watch.
That actually bothered me more than the referees screwing up. The referees, I get it. But when Mahomes played into it, that bothered me a lot.
Well, and I think, look, you mentioned some of the announcers, and I think the announcers understand for the most part how difficult a job refereeing an NFL game is. It's tough. And the NFL people are in your ear saying, got to protect these guys, got to do this, got to do that. But at the same time, there you have to draw a line in the sand at some point. And if you're an NFL referee, if you're a broadcaster, if you're the NFL, if you're anybody watching it. And I hit my line in the sand this weekend watching that. I was like, dude, I don't want to see this anymore. It's completely watering down what the product should be in these moments. And it's NFL football is about tenacity. It's about toughness. It's about everything else. And to see flopping happening like that, it was, I don't know. I couldn't do it, man. I tuned away for a little bit.
Take it a step further. Nothing is more physical, more tough. You get the defense than the playoff football. The tenacity of playoff football. And when you allow, I can use the word soft, but when you allow it to become
it's a pageant.
Joke,
it's a flopping pageant.
It's becoming that game was somewhat of a joke as far as the intensity that the players especially when Houston was allowed to play with.
You'd rather be talking about the big plays in that game. There's the crazy touchdown pass where Patrick Mahomes basically land parallel and hitting up Travis Kelce. We also had a similar one to that with Jared Goff in the Commanders and Lions game, but the Lions come up short 45-31, and the rookie, Jaden Daniels, continues to be phenomenal with Dan Quinn's staff, Cliff Kingsbury, gosh, Scary Terry out there, McLaurin. Mm-hmm. They look unbeatable right now. That was an upset.
Yeah, and I think the injuries finally came home to roost for Detroit. They had 16 players on the IR, and so many on defense. You don't tell me they couldn't use Aiden Hutchinson out there last night if you're Detroit to kind of help him in. Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels has just been nothing short of spectacular this season, and he's upped it. You know, I think he upped it starting with the game. Really in Philly the week before that we went to Washington and then played him, and he upped it there, and he's just continued to up it every week. He's matching the playoff level.
You know what stood out to me too, watching the Commanders, watching Jaden Daniels, watching how good they've been, is number one, the Dan Quinn naysayers that, you know, hey, retread, hey, didn't work here, whatever. He's a heck of a coach, Jaden Daniels, a heck of a player. We also, there's some local media members that wanted to get out there on socials and say the Falcons would have been embarrassed out of the playoffs. Well, last time I checked, Falcons looked better against the Commanders than the Lions did, who was the number one seed. And look, it's any given Sunday when you look at these playoff games. I just thought that was an unnecessary shot at the Atlanta Falcons. He didn't deserve to be there, so you didn't go. But look, man, you got to give all the credit in the world to Jaden Daniels. He's coming up on being the best rookie quarterback in the history of the NFL. He's getting there in a hurry, and I think he deserves all the credit in the world for his ability and what he's done so far.
Dan Quinn certainly agrees with that.
He just has a different poise about him than most. He's a rare competitor. There's no doubt about that. But in those moments, if he was a basketball player, he'd want the last shot. As a ball player, he wants the ball in his hands to make the difference. And he makes great decisions with the football. And that takes real mindfulness. Sometimes the best play may be, hey, I got to throw this away. He uses his legs. But he is a rare competitor for us. But his poise in these tight moments really stands out to us.
That's what you want out of any player on your team, any star player that wants the ball in their hands, like he alluded to take the last shot on the court, or to, you know, have the chance to put up a Hail Mary. This team has won in a number of different ways this season, and it's been really cool to see that happen behind a rookie quarterback like Jaden Daniels. All right, the Eagles beat the Rams 28-22. Saquon Barkley is phenomenal.
Well, he's got 5 guys in front of him that are pretty freaking good as a unit. And
they give credit to those guys all the time, him and Jalen Hurts. So it's nice to see.
Well, and Saquon is, you know, he's got it. And it is just knowing the right amount of aggressive running and burst with a little bit of patience and allowing something to open, and then the wherewithal to hit it and hit it fast. Their defense won them the game, though. The offense at times stalled out. The weather came into play a little bit, whether you want to, you know, some of the slipping around for the Rams and the fumbles, and the Rams still almost had a chance to win the game there late. But their run game is elite, and Jalen Hurts is a part of that. Now he's banged up the knee, so I don't know where that leads going into next week. But this Washington rush defense is one of the worst in the league. And Philly's one of the top 3 best run offenses in the league.
Yeah, and we knew it, and we all talked about it on Friday, that this game was going to come down to the trenches. It was going to come down to pass rush. And I just felt like Philly had the better offensive line and would be able to protect a little bit better. And really what it came down to your point, the running game. And look, Saquon, he was the perfect addition to this team compared to where they were. He was the perfect addition if you could stay healthy up front. And they've stayed healthy up front. Cam Jurgens has plugged in to where Jason Kelce used to be. And when you look at every other piece, Landon Dickerson got paid this last offseason. He put on an absolute clinic. Jordan Mailata is just incredible, and Lane Johnson is healthy, and he wasn't healthy through a lot of last year. So it is poetry in motion watching this run game. Not only the players go to work, but the design of it with Jalen Hurts in the backfield, it brings a tear to mine. Really does, man. It's beautiful watching them go to work.
Glad you said that, because that's kind of how I feel about the Bills and the Ravens. When Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen match up on the field, and just the, I guess somewhat of a, I don't know if I want to say camaraderie, but the respect, there we go, that they have for each other is really cool to see. The Bills, though, beat the Ravens 27-25. That game was another cold one.
Yeah, I didn't think Lamar Jackson played very well in the first half.
They all couldn't. I mean, they gave up the ball. They turned over the ball way too much.
Yeah. A bad pick, and the fumble was way worse. But then he came out in the second half and just absolutely lit it up. Lamar was phenomenal in the second half. Derrick Henry was better in the second half. They were better. Mark Andrews is one of the best tight ends in the league, and he had a very forgetful night.
Yeah, he did. And you know, it's interesting seeing the outpouring of support. A lot of people, you know, a lot of times people do pile jump, but man, it seemed like every media member or whatever else around the NFL that looked at that was like, I feel so bad for him because he's a good dude and he's been incredible throughout his career.
Characteristic for him
completely, so. And give credit to Buffalo what they did in the first half. Give credit to Josh Allen, didn't have to be asked to do a lot, did just enough. Weather was a little bit bad there. We could have two really good title games hopefully this Sunday.
When we come back here on the morning shift, we will hit a Mic'd Up. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, the day after Ohio State, the morning after, I should say, wins the first 12-team college football playoff national championship. They took the game 34-23 over Notre Dame. That gives them their sixth national title and first in a decade.
Really was an incredible run for them, man. And we've been talking about it all morning. Got to tip your cap to the ups and downs of that team. And, you know, Ryan Day talked about it. It's a group of guys that, overcame a few things. And look, we said it from the beginning. We talked to Rusty about it last offseason. Ohio State's talent was undisputed. And you just wondered what Will Howard would bring at the quarterback position. To me, he's one of the best stories because, from all reports, like Kansas State was like, dude, you need to go to the draft or somewhere else. And he lands at Ohio State and wins a national title. He said something like last night, like, thank God for, blessing me with the ability to come to Ohio State, which was awesome to hear. But to me, he was the best story of it. You felt bad for Riley Leonard because, Riley Leonard laid it all on the line. But in the end, Notre Dame, just not quite enough to overcome the talent, the speed, the toughness, the physicality from the Ohio State Buckeyes.
That's kind of I was kind of surprised how lost their defense looked. Notre Dame's the entire, well, most of the game to be fair, but especially the first half and the first possession of the third quarter, they just I don't want to say unprepared because I don't believe that, but they just looked out of sorts and overmatched is probably the best way to put it. I didn't like Marcus Freeman's fake punt. I thought that if you're going to go for it, just keep your all. I think it was 4th and 2. Now, if the guy catches it, it works. It's the classic.
Right?
It's the classic. Well, yeah, but the guy's got to make the play, and it's true. And I've said that in defense, or not even in defense, but an explanation of what we've had seen here in Atlanta at times. The reality is, to me, if you're going to do something like that, just keep your offense out there because it's your best chance of doing it. You don't have to rely on guys that aren't comfortable doing certain things. Yeah, it was your backup quarterback, but still.
Well, remember how in going back to Ohio State, the amount of money that they got in NIL, because Ryan Day, we talked about on this show, right, was at the podium or a press conference saying, like, we need, what was it, $20 million,
yep.
I think, to help build this roster. But look at, I mean, it kind of, I guess, tongue in cheek here, but it paid off.
Yeah. You're going to talk the talk. You got to walk. Oh, that's exactly what Ryan Day did. He basically was like, we can get this much money. We're going to win. And they did. And, it wasn't, like I said, without its hiccups along the way. And I'd be curious to see roster retention, because when you have that much money, you can pretty do a pretty good job of keeping people around because, nobody's going to outbid you for the most part for, some of the players that, you have in that thing. So, yeah. I do want to, real quick, before we get to Mic'd Up in a minute, I do want to just draw attention a little bit to next year's college football playoff odds. odds to win a national title, because I looked at them. There are some real long shots. Our buddy, friend of the show, Emory Hunt, that we've had on a couple of times now. Love talking to Emory. He's done a good job. He's the one that said Notre Dame would roll over Georgia. Has called a number of things out. His pick to win the college football playoff national title next year is the Florida Gators.
Okay.
I love him to death. I love him to death. Now, the Florida sits at plus 5,000. You have to go way down the list before you'll even get to them. They're right along the same lines as Auburn right now. Miami, South Carolina, right in front of them at plus 4,000. But Ohio State, obviously, the favorite. Texas right behind them. I think a lot of people believe in Arch Manning. Oregon, Georgia, Penn State, Notre Dame. You know, you start getting into the weeds of it. Alabama at plus 1,600. Tennessee at plus 1,800. I was a little bit shocked to see Emory Hunt go out there with Florida. I'm sure that that's, you know, hopeful thinking, wishful thinking, but nonetheless, I had to throw that at you. I was like, what do you think of our
you
buddy
Emory
Hunt? You
don't believe in your program?
I was like, schedule that man tomorrow. Get that guy on the phone.
I'm not a big fan of it, the expectation of that, but I don't feel the program is there yet. No, I think DJ Lagway could be a Heisman Trophy candidate next year. I think he's that good, and he elevates people around him. And you've done a good job of recruiting. Napier's done a good job of recruiting. But you have, you know, there's nothing that I've seen that proves that this team is in a better spot than what Georgia is every year with Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
Or what Texas is with Steve Sarkisian.
Georgia, by the way, plus 700.
What Notre Dame is with Marcus Freeman. What Ohio State is, what Oregon is, what Penn State is. There's nothing right now as we stand on January 21st that tells me, well, they're a dark horse candidate for a national title game, or they're Emory Hunt's favorite. So I'll hold off on all of that, especially with the schedule. We saw that with the schedule that Georgia played this year, which is very similar to what Florida played this year as well. Those two were the two toughest schedules I saw all year by any team in college football. They're also the two toughest schedules I've ever seen for any two teams in college football, and they have the same schedule next year. You just reverse where they're at.
Does it blow your mind a little bit, Ohio State being favored, even though you have some uncertainty at the quarterback? And almost every one of these teams, let me get that. You have uncertainty at the quarterback position for almost all these teams at the top 10 odds.
No, it doesn't, because Ohio State didn't have Will Howard this time last year.
Right. Yep.
And Raleigh Leonard wasn't at Notre Dame. Now, they both transferred in at some point during this window. I'm assuming they were probably on campus by January 21st. But they didn't go into last season returning a starting quarterback. So, no. I think if Ryan Day goes and stands in front of a podium and says, well, this year it'll take $23 million, you know, because inflation and
they're
stuff.
Give it to him.
I think he'll get it. Because
Coming off an Natty, you should.
But that's the other reason why I thought Ryan Day was on the hot seat. Not only did you lose to Michigan for the fourth time, but you also went in front of groups, the people that can get you gone, because they'll pay your buyout, and said you need X amount of dollars to win a national title game or to win a national title. And I don't think I thought if you did, you got that and didn't at least make it there, you put your neck on the line and give him credit. He asked for, he received it, and he made it happen. And you've got to give them and that program credit for that.
Yeah, you absolutely do. Like I said, Ohio State's favored. Texas, who does seem to have the answer to the quarterback position with Arch. Oregon, Georgia, Penn State, Notre Dame. Alabama, as a Bama guy, it kind of hurts to see them down at plus 1,600 for a national title. But it's just it's the state of affairs over in Tuscaloosa right now. You have to figure out the quarterback position. You have to do a number of things moving forward to make sure that you're going to be in the limelight. They do, I think they're, you know, return like 9 defensive starters, but that wasn't a terribly great unit. So we'll see kind of where that leads in year two for that group. But nonetheless, I thought it was interesting to see. You got LSU at plus 2,000. You got Ole Miss at 2,300. A&M at 3,100, Michigan up there plus 3,500, and then I look over to our buddy Emory Hunt, who's on CBS, and he's like, Florida, give me the Gators at 50-1 odds
that's
to win next year.
Yeah, that's his
wishful thinking.
That's his off-the-beaten-path is ESPN asking if Ryan Day is the best coach in college football today because of last night, which is also off the rocker, considering Kirby Smart still exists and is a head coach in college football.
Yeah. Well, was it the best halftime show you've ever seen? Let's hit Mike up. Honestly, the halftime show last night, Dylan, you can bring this in a little bit. Yeah, what you're listening to is Travis Scott.
Didn't he date a Kardashian?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he did.
They have two kids
She's
together,
actually
I believe.
Probably the hottest Kardashian, in my opinion.
Yes, he has a baby with Kylie.
Timothy Chalamet. They're together.
Yeah. I actually really respect that guy. I saw his high school. Have you seen the video of his high school talent show, Timothy?
Yes.
Not to get off the beaten path.
Timothy Chalamet is with a Kardashian
now? Extremely talented.
He is now with Kylie.
For a while.
Yeah.
But Kylie was with Travis Scott, but now they broke up and she's now with Timothy.
Clearly, Dylan is keeping up with the Kardashians.
Yeah,
I know a thing or two about the Kardashians.
I will say, we got to go back to Travis Scott, but Timothy Chalamet is high school.
You should be talking about the Detroit halftime game if you guys saw that.
Do they have dogs with frisbees?
No, it was which ball? Sorry, Dylan.
Jello. LiAngelo ball.
LiAngelo.
I might swerve it, man. That corner. Whoa.
Anyways, I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on the Travis Scott halftime. He was reported. So, he wasn't in the building, and it was very clear to me that this was all pre-recorded. It was supposed to be. He's doing the halftime show on the top of Mercedes-Benz Stadium during the national championship game, and they have this whole intro where they zoom out from the 50-yard line and go through the roof of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and then they show him out on the roof. And it looked to me like the entire background was like CGI. And it was probably recorded 3 days ago. And it just absolutely, in every sense of the way, missed the mark for me. And I think our buddy Mark Zeno tweeted, he was like, 20 degrees on the roof of Mercedes-Benz Stadium? No thanks. And I'm like, Mark, if you think that guy is on the roof of Mercedes-Benz Stadium right now, I don't even know what to tell you, man. So, Zeno, if you're listening, I think you've lost your mind. I wanted to get you guys to release a new song.
He lost his mind a long time ago. But.
Well, absolutely, but. Travis Scott releases a new song. It's called 4x4 last night. And I be honest with you, this is not a shot of him. Wasn't sure what exactly he was saying. There were some sound issues and everything else going on. Now, he did. Let me give you the bright side. He did release a line of merchandise or something else where all the proceeds that he gets from that is going to L.A. wildfire victims. So there's some good to come out of that. But I could not believe what I was watching. When you talk about halftime shows – I'm assuming maybe anybody in the house can tweet me and let me know. I'm assuming the bands were probably on the field inside. I don't know what they were showing on the Halo board and everything else, but ESPN zooming out of the roof, showing Travis Scott on top of the roof. I was like, dude, what am I looking at here?
Oh, that's absolutely live.
What am I watching?
Oh, I think Zeno's right. It's live. You can tell. I mean,
what? Do I need to come around and look at your
Getting
computer?
Getting filmed with drones flying around his head and everything else
youth.
Going on.
What did you think of the performance?
I thought it was amazing visually. Like, the visuals were great. Like, there were shots of, where fire was coming out of the trombones and somebody was playing it. Him being on the roof is spectacular. But to Mike's point, it definitely did not look live. It looked pre-recorded. And I think it also missed the mark where I like halftime.
It looks like a music video.
Exactly. It looks exactly like a music video. Yes.
It looks kind of cool for what it looks like.
It looks cool, but I think it should have been – I missed, I want halftime shows where the crowd is actually involved and you can see the crowd reacting to things. I want more crowd involvement.
Beyonce hanging from the ceiling, Riri dropping down, arriving up to the ceiling, Lady Gaga.
We'll do all the cool stuff.
We have to handle
visually, but I want to see it inside with the crowd.
Travis Scott could have. I don't know why we didn't deal with a situation where he's up in the goal wing, section, or there's a stage up there or something. It just completely missed the mark for me. And I know, look. And I don't know if people realize this. When you do NFL halftime shows, they triple the length of an NFL halftime, right? It goes from it's usually a 9-minute halftime to all of a sudden it's a 35-minute halftime. And the NFL tells you that beforehand.
I hate that.
A lot of players will go in there and completely change clothes, maybe even get a shower. They'll do a number of different things, keep stretching, stay loose. Maybe that's not an option for the NCAA in college football right now. Maybe that was the hurdle, but I'm sitting there watching this going, you can't tell me this guy's on the roof right now. And it looked to me, I don't know this, it looked to me like ESPN was like, hey, let's play this trailer for Travis Scott and let's act like it's a halftime show. it was ridiculous. But, nonetheless, I know he's a good musician. So I just it dismissed the mark for me.
When we come back here on the morning shift, we do have Dave Archer joining us a little bit later in the show. So be tuned for that at 8:20. But up next, we have a man up. How do these guys fare this weekend with their picks? We'll be right back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.